And so the kids in school, they know I bling a bit. You know, I wear the Gucci, I wear the Louis. And so I was laying in bed one night and I thought to myself, architecture, Gucci, Louis Vuitton. Then I went to a couple of architects, got them to think about it. And one of them turned it into GLAM, G-L-A-M. Gucci, Louis Vuitton architecture, and the most important part of it is me.
Welcome to Stand Tall with Rachel Bell, brought to you by Stride Treglown. Stand Tall is conversations with people blazing a trail across property, architecture, engineering, and construction. Expect fast-flowing conversations about life, careers, and defining moments. And stay tuned for the quickfire questions towards the end for pearls of wisdom, advice, and humour. I'm thrilled to welcome Neil Pinder to the show today. For those who haven't come across him before, Neil is an award-winning educator and activist on a mission to demystify and diversify the architectural profession. He does a lot. For over 25 years, Neil has taught in a number of inner city schools and is currently head of product design and architecture at Graveney School in South London, where he actually introduced architecture into the curriculum. He's a trustee of the Thornton Education Trust and Blueprint for All, formerly the Stephen Lawrence Charitable Trust. He's an honorary professor at the Bartlett School of Architecture and also an Arkwright interviewer for a prestigious engineering scholarship. However, Neil is perhaps best known for the many initiatives he has spearheaded to inspire and support a new and diverse generation of young designers into the creative industries. These include Celebrating Architecture, Homegrown Plus, GLAM, and that stands for Gucci, Louis Vuitton, Architecture and Me, and the Transatlantic Architectural Exchange Programme, Nylon. In this episode, we talk about the importance of creativity in education, the power of early role models, plus why networks matter. And we, of course, dig deeper into Neil's wonderful world of initiatives designed to make architecture more accessible and representative of wider society. So let's meet Neil. Neil, it's really good to finally get to speak to you today. I'm really looking forward to our discussion. I wonder if you wanted to briefly just introduce yourself. I'm expecting quite a long introduction because your profile and the things that you've achieved over your career is outstanding, and hence why we've invited you on to Stand Tall today.
First of all, thank you very much, Rachel. Yeah, I've had a illustrious career so far with young people working, enthused and getting them into architecture, engineering and creativity. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Every year is a different year. Every group of kids is a different group of young people who think they're original. But they give you the energy, they give you the life, they give you the passion to teach. And I think that is why I enjoy teaching so much, because it's about what they give to you, what you give to them, and then you see them developing as young people.
And I came across your profile following your 2022 AJ Contribution to the Profession Award. And what struck me was exactly all of the things that you are doing, reaching out to the younger generation, changing the conversation about architecture, and we'll come on to that. But what also struck me, and a slightly different start to the Stand Tall podcast, was the image of you doing a headstand and your passion for yoga. It's one of my favourite things. If people don't know me, I've been practising yoga for 20 years. And I wonder if we start with what yoga gives you in terms of your life and how you bring some of those aspects into your teaching and your ethics. And it'd be interesting to hear how you loop that kind of practice into your daily work.
First of all, what yoga does, it gives you a standing, it gives you a calmness. And so every single one of my lessons, my registrations, I make all the students stand up at the end of the lesson and do palms to heart for actions of peace, and palms to lips for words of truth, and palms to head for thoughts of love, peace and happiness. And I say to them, you know, we are so overrun by digitalization, and what students don't have is that one moment, a non-digitalized interference. So I say to them, just stand still, get calm, and then we do this mantra at the end. And it's a good way to suss out who you can have a little bit of hassle with or who are going to be the more challenging kids. Because what they do is, instead of closing their eyes, you get the ones opening their eyes. And I say to them, the reason you're opening your eyes is because you don't believe in your own self and you're not confident in your own self being. So you think that everybody's going to be looking at you. But if we all agree to close our eyes, then nobody's looking at anybody else. And then after the X number of times, you get most of them are closing their eyes. But the ones who don't close their eyes, they're the ones who I know that are going to be the challenging ones.
Yeah, I think for me, certainly, that digital detox is exactly why I know that the time that I'm on my mat is my time. And that is one of the very rare times I totally switch off. And I know that I can focus and bring my focus to me, more importantly. And actually, in challenging situations, you can bring that calmness into that space.
And it's also about the breath as well, which is really important, because majority of time, all of us don't breathe correctly. And you and I know it. If you breathe in yoga, you learn to breathe. I mean, you never perfect it. And if you link that in with yoga and structure, then you can teach them about how buildings stand up, how things stand up, just because of different yoga positions.
So on that basis, let's dip more into the specifics around the industry and why we have you on the Stand Tall podcast. Throughout your career, you've been championing for diversity in architecture. So I wonder, can you talk about some of the current industry statistics around diversity? And we're talking about racial diversity maybe more today. I've seen some really stark facts and figures recently. And then I know you've talked about the power of language, and I've seen you use the term global majority. So perhaps you could tell us more about that too.
Rosemary Campbell-Stevens, she wrote a report back in 2003, an educational report about the global majority. And I've been championing that word. It's not about colour, race, creed, class. About 80 to 85% of the world's population are the global majority. BAME doesn't exist in our vocabulary. It's convenient that X number of years ago, people got grants because they felt that they had to be in this BAME. And depicting words is the first thing that I think you have to do in architecture, and how these words affect people, cultures, indigenous people, etc. And then you move on from there. So statistically, people from the global majority are nearly twice as likely to fall out after their part one. And that's because of all the challenging situations that occur. And so we come up with an initiative called NYLON, New York and London, which is a perfect introduction into the global majority student who feels that they might give up. But what we do, we throw them this lifeline. It's only for 10 students at the moment. And we're sponsored by a list of architectural practices. It's to level that playing field a little bit, but also give them a chance to come out of where they are and experience some place where they may never have gone to in their younger years as a part one, and then to open their eyes. So we devise projects to enthuse them.
That's incredible to hear the amazing difference you're making. And we'll come on to talk about many more of the initiatives a little later. But first, I wonder, can you tell us a little bit more about your background and how that's influenced your work today? And I've read some articles. I know that you've highlighted some influential role models and teachers in your earlier life. And I'd love to hear more about that.
So my parents came over in the 50s, 60s. My mum was a nurse. My dad was a carpenter. They wanted the best for me and my brother, who were twins. We went to an ordinary comprehensive school. We lived on an estate called Patmore Estate, which is right opposite Battersea Power Station. Looking back at the Patmore now, it is an absolutely brilliant estate in terms of the way it was designed. And the landscaping was fantastic. In the spring, you saw blossoming trees. And although we used them as goalposts at the time, but these trees and the grass, which was cut within an inch of its life, you know, was immaculate, and it was hedged off, and everything was so, so beautifully presented. So unbeknown to me, that like subliminally stuck in my head. And then later on, I've been telling students to go and look at the Patmore and look at these estates. Everything's divided up with these white lines, and the roofs are really lovely contoured, and the buildings are set east-west, so they had sunset and sunrise, etc. I mean, it is a phenomenal piece of architecture if you look at it. So that was like my foundation. And then the turning point was my music teacher and my art teacher. So my music teacher sort of adopted me, my mates, got us to study classical music. So we won scholarships to the Centre for Young Musicians. And at the same time, I had an art teacher who was Norman Barrett. You know, you always remember your teachers by their two names, Michael Bailey and Norman Barrett.
Alf Anstey was my tutor, and my CDT tutor, who I absolutely adored. And CDT was essentially why I got into architecture. You know, I love the technical drawing, but also the making of things. And he was a great inspiration for me.
Yeah. So Norman Barrett, he was the art director at the Questis Theatre. I used to spend time in the art. And one day he said, Neil, you thought of going to art school? And I said, no, not really. And he said, let's get you on the road. From there, it just led into going to Campbell Art School. Instead of music, I did art, and then the DJ. I was always, you know, dabbling with a bit of
DJ. You came back to music, yeah.
Yeah. I used to run a club on the King's Road. On the Saturday night, I used to DJ. And then on Monday night, I used to run the club on that. I mean, there were such good times. And that's how music and art. Even today, I meet young architects. I met one the other day on Thornton Educational Trust. I was chairing a debate about education and architecture and engineering. And she says, I'm a DJ. You know, it transcends all age groups. You know, look at loads of musicians or artists or architects. They've been DJs because through music, you've become creative. And through creativity, you can go into any avenue that you want to go.
It's a great influence. And also, I suppose, it's a rhythm, a creativeness, isn't it? That you can bring lots of different aspects to. So I wonder now, looking at what you've been achieving over the last number of years, let's dip into some of those other aspects then of how you have brought together all of those interests through music, through creativity, and reaching out to the younger generation to try and say architecture isn't just an elitist career. How did you get into those types of discussions, and how did Homegrown Plus start?
Pre-Homegrown Plus, I went to this girls' school, 19% A to C grades, and design, they had really good machines, but there was no creativity given to them. So I started getting architects in through Victoria Thornton's open house and her educational initiative for young people. And that was amazing, because what that did is we was able to go and visit buildings. We was able to get architects come into the school. And then from there, they were able to design various structures and products. And then with my contacts, because I've always had contacts in wood, metal, plastic, glass. I remember one young lady, she wanted to design a glass table. And so I got my mates who owned a glass company, and I said to them, look, she wants to design a glass table. What can we do? So he went to his boss. His boss cut the glass up for me. And then we UV bonded all the glass together. And then she had this absolutely fantastic table. And it had never been seen like this before in the school. And then when her initiative, open house, finished, then I started celebrating architecture, which I did out of Ellis Woodman from the Architecture Foundation. I remember going to Ellis saying, look, I'd like to get some of my ex-students to come back and do a bit of a show at the Royal College. And he said, yes, love it. I was thinking, how can I get this initiative going? I hadn't had anything to do with sort of real architecture before on my own sort of thing. And so Venetia Wolfenden, she had just left Open City. And I rang her up. I said, Venetia, what are you doing? I said, do you fancy working with me and get this thing off the ground? She said, yeah. And so that's how we started celebrating architecture. And every year we would do a pavilion project where we took four or five different schools, took them to the Serpentine Pavilion, and then we started moving it around different pavilions, and we'd make up the working frames so that they could design these different pavilions in their own little groups. And we'd have a ceremony where I designed all the medals out of on the 3D printer, and we'd have a big ceremony in the hall, and then I'd invite various architectural practices to come and speak. And that was celebrating architecture. So that was pre-Homegrown Plus.
And so where is Homegrown Plus now in terms of what you've achieved since then? And what are the kind of future plans in terms of where next for you on that one?
Well, Homegrown Plus grew out of all of the young architects who left school, who I taught, who became architects. So, for example, Joseph Henry, who's won the British Biennale Entry for 2023 in Venice. Mark Warren, who is an architect at Greenwich, and he was at Studio Ygritte, I think. But these guys, they've grown up with me and they've become super architects. And then loads of people from the global majority I've brought through to be architects. So I started thinking, how can I keep them? I made them into a WhatsApp group once they left school, called it Young, Gifted and Back, BACK. And it's a WhatsApp group that like all of them use from time to time. And they share where they are. Some are in Dubai, you know, literally they're all over the place. What happened as they started bringing more of their friends to me, I thought I'm going to have to make something a bit more formal. And so I thought all the ones that I've taught and are called Homegrown, and the pluses are all their friends that come to me. So that's how we had Homegrown Plus. From there, literally, it spilled out everywhere. We work across the world now with different initiatives that we do.
And it's a wonderful network, isn't it? As you say, joining them together and keeping them in touch and looping together with all of the work that they're doing once qualified or getting to qualification, and that support network that I'm sure they benefit from being connected with you, connected with other peers as well.
Yeah, definitely. Because I have to tell them, once you get your part one, that isn't it. Because, you know, when I remember, and most probably like you, when you got your degree, you thought, I've got a degree, I'm made. Nobody tells you that the real life begins then. And so I say to them, what you have to do is now you have to show some, I've called it the circular economy of education, because you started off, and because this person helped you, that person helped you, that person helped you. Now you got to complete the circle by you helping the next generations and the next generations and the next generations. And that's how you add your social value to the circular economy of architectural education. And you could do this with anything, really.
Yet another initiative that you've been involved in, which I'm really interested in, and I've heard a little bit about through other things I've listened to, which is GLAM, because that for me is exciting. Actually thinking about materials and the materiality of how you bring that into design, and whether that is furniture or a piece of architecture. I love textiles at school, again, through CDT textiles, all of those types of industries or subjects, and how that might have influenced me into architecture. Explain a little bit about GLAM then and where that came from and what that does.
So GLAM arose, literally it was a sad way it arose, because one of my year 11 students, no, she was year 10, and she was in a class of privileged young ladies, and she was from Morocco, I think, and so she didn't really gel with them. And so her textile teacher said, look, why don't you go and sit with Mr. Pinder? Because the actual materiality, as you just spoken, it's just one for another, basically. You're doing textiles, they do wood, metal and plastics. But the syllabus is exactly the same. So she came in my room, and literally when she presented her work back to her peers. They couldn't believe the work that she's done. She was suppressed because she felt imposter syndrome, which is one of the syndromes I've felt, most probably you've felt, you know, it depends where you go with situation. That imposter syndrome holds you back so much. And so she said to me when she got to year 11, I'm just going to go and have a look at a couple of unis and stuff. And she went to one and she came back and she was so sad. And it brings tears to my eyes. The person said to her, and didn't even say a portfolio, but just with the way she was talking, and said, you'll never make a designer. And I thought, oh no. And so I thought to myself, how could I do something to make enthuse this young lady? And it's not just her, it'd be so many. And so the kids in school, they know I bling a bit, you know, I wear the Gucci, I wear the Louis. And so, you know, they say in their term, I drip a bit, yeah? Right? And so I was laying in bed one night and I thought to myself, architecture, Gucci, Louis Vuitton. And then I went to a couple of architects, got them to think about it. And one of them turned it into GLAM, G-L-A-M, Gucci, Louis Vuitton architecture. And the most important part of it is me. I did this with Professor Harriet Harris. I told her about it. So I did GLAM Goes Global. It became a Zoom workshop in lockdown. And we connected to so many different people and rooms. And it's about wearable, sustainable architecture. And the whole idea is that you can't go out and buy a nice piece of blingy, reflective material that costs, you know, whatever. It's a level playing field. You use everything out your recycle bin. And you turn that into a piece of wearable architecture. So we had people in Salford, we had people in South Africa, we have people everywhere. We did one a couple of weeks ago and we had like 80 kids from the Gambia in one room. They have to hire a generator, hire Wi-Fi, and they have to get all of their bits and odds and ends together. But these people are really talented, really, really talented. So that's how GLAM came about. Basically, as I said, Harriet Harris coined it a Trojan horse. So that's where I did an article for the Rocker Gallery called Architecture, Education and the Trojan Horse.
It's amazing. And I think, yeah, the fact that it's gone global and that you can connect so many people together in a creative way that opens so many other aspects to just the wider kind of engagement in the built environment, whether that's the clothes we wear or the buildings that we engage with. In terms of kind of the language that you use specifically to that next generation, and I know that can be quite a blocker, how do you think we need to change that language then that is more accessible and becomes clearer what we're all trying to achieve and how they can engage with that?
First of all, I suggested to Victoria recently, because I'm a trustee of Thornton Educational Trust as well, that every architectural practice should adopt a school, which will mean that they have to come off of their high standards of difficult language. So, you know, as someone explained to me, when a doctor is explaining to a patient a very dangerous procedure or operation, they don't use the technical words and terminologies. They explain it so that the patient, whoever they're catering for, understands what may lay ahead. But when you've got architects sitting there or addressing certain architects, because the ones I work with, as I said, they're amazing. They use the language and it's not dumbing down. It's not dumbing down at all. It's making sure that you can communicate your ideas, your passion, your vision, so that somebody else who is not up to your basically educational standards can understand the concept and then run with the concept. You know, it's not for you to say these are all the most difficult terminologies. You've got to understand them and then insert them in. No, let's be real and connect and talk to people on a level. And as I said, it's not dumbing down at all. What it is, it's being able to communicate using basic human skills.
Yeah. And with all of these amazing things that you're doing and connecting in and going global, what challenges have you especially faced in the industry?
They don't give me enough money. I mean, don't matter which way you flip it. you know, we are doing, and I'm not just saying myself, but people who are doing and who are organizing, enthusing, motivating young people, they, a lot of them are doing it for next to nothing. And you look at the four big developers in the UK, they turn over, what, 14 billion a year, approximately, you know? And so what can you say? You know, we have to make sure that the people who are living in the cities, not the people who just suddenly come into the cities because, you know, they come from the Shire counties, they come into the cities and spend a little bit of time here and then they go back. People like myself and this big melting pot of city dwellers, we got to make sure that they're the ones who design in the cities because they know everything that there is to know about a city firsthand, the lived experience. You know, you can write a whole thesis, but you may not know what is involved in cohabitating with somebody who may be a different culture, who may be come from a different part of the world, somebody who may have different sort of habits to you. You don't know that. You can't just read it. You've got to have that lived experience. And that's why what enthuses me to make sure that young people are the ones who are in charge of their own destiny.
What's your biggest ask then to the industry? What would be your sort of golden ticket to making that happen now?
Number one, support the initiatives that I do and don't just use me as a tick box. If you want to understand what we're doing, join us. And don't fob us off with, oh, the budget's tight this year, blah, 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 blah. When you've just won a multi-million pound infrastructure development project in a part of London, that doesn't wash off anymore. What we're saying is come to us. Don't let us have to come to you. I mean, British Airways, they have never sponsored any other architectural initiatives. And we were the first. And they saw what we was doing. An absolutely fantastic, inspirational woman saw us, interviewed me and said, yes, I like what you're doing. And that's why we could go to New York. But we need the sponsorship. We need, because we can think up of ideas. I think up of a million and one different ideas all the time of how to engage. The creative people like yourself, you can think up of a million and one different ideas of how to engage with young people and enthuse them and make them passionate about life and about creativity. And that's what we have to do. And the other ask we have to do is look at the educational system, because under this government, creative education has had a massive blow. Since 2012, I think, 50 to 57% of creative subjects have gone. And they've tried to monetize it by saying to the schools, oh, you've got a choice. They've introduced Progress 8. Progress 8 are the 8 core subjects that they deem as the 8 core subjects. Things like drama, art, technology, food technology, textiles, they're all gone. Some schools haven't even got a design and technology department.
Yeah, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today if I didn't have textiles, CDT, all of those subjects. So yeah, I think that's a much poorer education system. And yeah, it lacks the diversity, doesn't it, in terms of that wider ability to reach out to those that are skilled in various different aspects. So yeah, that's really sad.
I mean, you look at it, pre-pandemic, just in London alone, it was estimated £50 billion a year was turnover or creative industries. And you're thinking to yourself, but we need it to be, everybody needs to be involved in this creativity, not pigeonhole us because we can sing and dance. And because of digitalization, I think it's even subdividing people more into, you don't have to be a mathematical genius to be an architect. Shove it over to someone who's really good at maths.
There are engineers to do that.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
I finished with all my guests to ask them 3 questions. So let's launch into that. My mantra is stand tall. And I wonder if you have a mantra that you live by.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to cheat a bit. I'm sorry. I've got two.
I'll let you off.
The first one is live each day like the first and spend it like it's your last. Because if you came down to earth and this was your first day, you would be looking at every single sort of creation and engaging with it. And if you knew it was your last day, you would be looking around at the colours, you'd be smelling the environment, the different textures, the different smells, the different tastes. And that's what I think, if you embrace that part, then you, every single day you'll wake up thinking, right, I'm living my best life today. And then you could spread happiness around. And the second part to it, this is a cheat, a reason, a season, and a lifetime. And throughout my life and throughout your life and everybody's life, people come into your life for a reason. They may not stay around a long time, but it's a reason. Sometimes it's really clear when things happen. Sometimes it's not clear until afterwards. And then some people are in your life for a season. And those people that are in your life for a season, they may make positive or negative changes, but they're there for a short time. And then if you look in your back in your life, there are people been in your life for a lifetime. And that is what the whole mantra is there. A reason, a season, and a lifetime. And it's the understanding how we interact, interface with different people.
They are two fantastic ones, so we'll let you off on that. So the second question, I started this year with one word, and that's instead of a New Year's resolution. So my one word was simplicity, which has been hugely difficult to live up to. So if you could choose one word, what would that be?
You know it already, namaste. And so this means, roughly translated, the divine within me bows to the same divine within you.
It's fantastic. And what would be your call to action or the one thing that you would change around the industry?
I use the word equity. So we cross out equality and use the word equity so that everyone is loved and respected for who they are and what they are, not judged for anything else.
That's beautiful. Neil, I really want to thank you for today. But before we say goodbye, do you want to let people know where they can reach out to you, importantly, how they can get in touch with you across any social media channels?
Yeah, you can connect to me via Homegrown Plus on our website. You'll see everything popping up there, the videos, everything that we do. You can link into me on Neil Pinder, and I would love you to link into me because I'm always posting on there. And Instagram, Homegrown Plus, Celebrating Architecture, and Glam Goes Global.
Fantastic. And we'll add all those links onto the show notes so people will know all of those. So thank you very much, Neil. And I will say namaste. Really appreciate your time today.
Rachel, thanks a million for giving me the opportunity to talk passion with you. And I can see that you're just as passionate as myself when it comes to delivering the world of creativity, architecture, diversity, and inclusion to everyone. Namaste.
Thanks once again to Neil for joining me on the show. I have to say I was absolutely blown away by his energy and enthusiasm for teaching and just widening young people's creative horizons. I'd urge you to check out Neil's initiatives and perhaps consider how you might be able to get involved. As I said earlier, links and resources can be found in the show notes. Thanks to Stride Treglown for sponsoring this podcast. If you want any further information on this podcast or Stride Treglown, then please visit stridetreglown.com and at stridetreglown on social media. You can follow me and let me know what you think of the show at RachelJ_Bell across Twitter and Instagram. Stand tall and talk soon.